interview with Charles Kirbo, K-I-R-B-O, Chairman, Georgia Democratic Party, May 1st, 1974.
Changes you've observed in Georgia politics in the last 25 years.
Well, I expect it has to do with the race question. I think there's been a big change in the attitudes of people about the part of black people in the school system and participating in government. Part in the life of Georgia. It's been a slow but steady, firm change in people's attitude. It's been rather painful, but it's changed. I think it's just in politics itself, I think it's had the biggest effect. In the way people campaign, what they say, and how they get elected. They along somewhat parallel with that, there's been a big change in the part of the state government. Passionate areas and trying to help people with their problems more than they had, much more than they had prior to 1948. That's come about mostly, I think, in the 60s. And it has been accelerated in the 70s.
You
want black sugar, cream sugar.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Kirby, what do you think has been the prime reason for that change? And how do you account for the accommodation of whites to the changing conditions, and also what do you think caused the change in attitudes?
Well, some of it, of course, has been compulsory. Connection with the courts. But I think really that there's always been latent in the average Georgian a desire to get along with everybody and treat everybody fairly. But that everything has to be accomplished in a climate. And in some way or another, we got off into a climate where you just couldn't do things and say things. Help develop people's attitude toward blacks. There was this demagogue, nigger-loving type of talk that made people that really the majority of the people that didn't want to mistreat people. It prevented them from speaking out. And one of the great things I think that Jimmy Carter has done, he brought that out in the area where it was thought to be the worst in South Georgia, in rural areas. And he could do it because he came out from down there and he understood it. And he's done a hell of a lot toward bringing that out. There's a lot of other factors about it. One has been a change in the economy. To some extent, people are just as good as they can afford to be. And it's easier to be it's a good climate to have good change when you have plenty. When I was a boy, the best jobs in a community would be government jobs, working for the city, working for the county. And leaders of the cities and the counties were powerful because people wanted those jobs. But hell, now they can't get people to take them. Nobody wants a damn job. And if people are able to feel and act and do like they please to some extent. And I think it, to some extent, it reflects people being themselves rather than following these leaders that stirred up this problem. You take the young people, there's another reason for it. They grow up. I was felt differently about it than my father. Not so much my father, but his contemporaries. And my children feel a little differently about it. It's about the question of not the question of integration, or the question of social contact as much as people feel like it, they ought to have their share of everything. They ought to be permitted to participate in things. I don't think as far as the mingling of the races and the social area, I don't think there's been a much of a change in that, except that people recognize if somebody wants to do that, they've got a right to do that, and they don't try to interfere with them. But I sort of doubt if there'll ever be any complete mingling or amalgamation of the blacks and whites. But as far as their participation in the government and the economy, well, I think it's coming along fine.
Mr. Kerbal, could you give us just a little bit of background about yourself, where you grew up, and also your political background?
I was born in Bainbridge, Georgia, which is down in the southwest corner of the state. So it was a small town, and my father was a bookkeeper at a sawmill at that time. He later studied law and was a county officer there at Bainbridge, the clerk of the court. And I went through the school system there, went to the University of Georgia, went to the University of Georgia Law School. And I was in the Army 5 years in World War II. And came back to Bainbridge and practiced law. Until 1960, when I joined this firm in Atlanta. I've never run for public office. I've had a mild interest in politics up until 1966 when I got tangled up with Jimmy Carter. And I represented him in an election contest. And then I managed his campaign and election in 66. And when he was defeated. And then I managed it when he was elected in 70. I've been the chief of staff, which is a more honorary position, but I've advised him so that with others help get his program implemented. I've been serving for about a year and a half or 2 years. It's a very unhappy job, which is the chairman of the Democratic Party that I sort of got by default. We couldn't find anybody else to handle it, you know. So I'm just sort of nursing the job. And I haven't had any major participation in politics. Other than that, I've kept various candidates on a local basis. Mostly old roommates or schoolmates or something happened to be running for office.
What attracted you to Jimmy Carter?
Well, in connection with the litigation that we were in, I first found out that he was a very able organizer. And then I learned that in association with him, he was one of the best informed people I'd ever known, especially about government. Perhaps that he viewed most issues the same way I did. And that he was a rather courageous fellow.
I'm gonna close this door.
Okay.
How would you assess his administration? Does it measure up to what you thought it would?
I really think it's probably greater, because I had fears that we wouldn't be able to enact a reorganization, because it hadn't really reached its greatest effect, I don't think, yet, particularly in the Department of Human Resources, but it's beginning to come along now. But it's a drastic change that'll go on for, I'd say, another 25 years. And in that time, that assuming she's got some well-motivated governors, it can really be developed into a fine system. But the things that, some of the things that he's accomplished are rather intangible, and it goes back to this area that I've been talking about, is that he talked with rednecks. I'm a redneck. Farmers about these race questions and analyze them with them, not only on the moral area, but their own self-interest in solving. And it just brought a new approach to dealing with problems like that. Everybody's been talking about them in the back room, restroom, and all that. He started it off in his campaign. Nobody paid much attention to him about that area, I don't think, because he was from South Georgia, and they assumed that he'd handle that area all right. But he said the same things, and nobody listened. But they began to listen after he got to be governor. But there's a lot of other areas that I think is going to be most helpful. And one of them I'm the proudest of is in the judiciary. He's not a lawyer. And the lawyers have been scuffing and screwing around for 30 years that I've known about the law, trying to reorganize the bar and set up some sort of administration of justice. And they haven't been able to. But damn if he didn't, at times, over my objection about the way he handled it, damn if he didn't get them all together and has completely revamped the judicial system. And he's got accomplished every damn thing in that area that the lawyer that professed them on accomplished for the last 30, 40 years. One of them has worked out. Is a selection of judges. And he's got a committee of half laymen and half lawyers. And they get up a list of names of five for each vacancy. And then he selects usually the one they rate the highest from the that list, and it's just worked out beautifully.
How were judges selected previously?
Most of them were, of course, they are elected eventually, but an appointment. In the case of a vacancy, appointment is equivalent to election, actually, because they're always, the incumbent always gets elected. And we just had some of the worst appointments.
They've always been appointed by the governor, is that correct? So that what he has done is installed a screening process in effect.
And it's the damnedest thing. It looks foolish on me. It looked foolish to me at the time, and I helped him work it out, but I didn't think much of it. Carl Sanders had sort of toyed with something like that, but he'd always end up screwing around and figuring out who he wanted and get that guy appointed. But the thing that's amazed me about it, when you appoint a judge, everybody who wants the damn thing and doesn't get it gets mad. And the way they worked it, anybody that's interested in being the judge, he can write the committee, he can get somebody to recommend him, or he can recommend himself. They send out a form to him, which I figured wouldn't anybody fill out, but they have damn if they don't, they just, a lot of them fill them out, send them back. Then they have a meeting and let the, sort of a screening meeting, let them come in there and state their case, why they'd like to be there, let some of the friends come in there. And then they check their qualifications in the Martindale Hubble. And the odd thing to me is that after they're selected, almost invariably the lawyers tell me they're satisfied. They never had been considered for appointments before. They just read in the damn paper where Joe Blow had been appointed. And it's, I think it, the good effect it's been is it's made all the lawyers realize that they've got an opportunity to be appointed regardless of who they supported. And in many instances, the appointments have gone to people who didn't support Jimmy. But they, and that they need to get along with the bar and they need to have a good reputation. Or they won't ever get by the damn committee. And it's really, and we've got Jimmy has appointed 4 judges to the Supreme Court, and which is now a majority of them. And we really, I believe we've got the strongest court in the United States now. They're all top-notch lawyers. And, Two of them are liberal and 2 of them are moderate to conservative. But that hadn't entered into the selection.
Are most of them men with political backgrounds?
Well, let's see. Two of them were already judges on the Court of Appeals. Bob Hall and Bob Jordan, and I guess you'd say they had political backgrounds because they had been judges on the lower court before. And the other, neither of the other two had any political background other than most lawyers at some time or another have something to do with it. Local politics. Three of them are highly educated. But one of the things, I maybe got too much off on that judicial area, but
I'd like to ask you just a little bit more about it. Some of the other, if you could just sort of summarize the other specific changes in revamping the judicial system besides the selection of judges.
Well, they now have where you can a committee or system whereby incompetent judges misbehave can be removed. They have a judicial administrator that is compiling information and doing all the things that judicial administrators can do to try to speed up things. One of the big problems we found out, nobody really knew what the damn statistics were about the judicial system in Georgia. All they knew, it was screwed up. And so they now have developed enough information that we can do something about it.
This is such things, backlog of cases, workloads, and that sort of information?
Yes, and this boy Bob Hall, who was appointed to the Supreme Court, has had a he was already working in that area. Most of these plans and changes in the judicial area were not Carter conceived of them. They were typical changes that are being pushed by progressive lawyers in most all of the states, but the damn trouble is accomplishing them.
Did he accomplish it through executive order or through legislation?
Well, the judicial selection area was accomplished through executive order, and it won't necessarily be followed by the next government, but it's very likely to, because it's been so widely accepted, and the bar will really raise hell for the next governor if he doesn't continue. And a good bit of the other was, some of it was accomplished by a constitutional amendment, and with complete harmony on it. A great deal of it was accomplished in legislation, and a lot of it has been sort of running with that. It's been changes in the administration of justice, and the trial procedures, particularly in the criminal area, and in the prison system. Oh boy, it really had a change in the prison system. You couldn't imagine how much has been accomplished in that area.
And that been primarily as a result of bringing in Ellis in prison?
Yes. Bringing in Ellis plus the support he's had. It's been a damn, that's a right touchy damn area. It's been really a damn fight. And Ellis was a damn good salesman, you know. Good speaker, fine looking, tough fella. And knew how to get federal money and every other kind of thing like that. But he is really the one of the best things he's done was create a staff over there. When I know when we hired him, Jim and I met with him over here one night, and the biggest problem was Ellis had some people he wanted to bring down here, and we didn't know anything about this prison system over there. He didn't either, and he didn't know whether we'd have room for his stay. And Ellis was over there about a week, and he called me and said, there's not any problems, there's not any staff. Just had the prison commission and the secretary. And all he had was the records from the information would come in there, a card on the prison, he'd just take it. Cards and shuffle them around and assign them. And that was about the only damn function that the prison, the director of the prison had. But it's really been a big change over there. At the same time, while Ellis was bringing them the number of prisoners down, Jimmy had this. Got this guy down from Statesboro, Beardsley, put him in charge of it. He was a college professor, put him in charge of the GBI. And that guy's good, and he's got up all kind of programs to, and he's just been filling the damn prison up. Ellis moving them out, and Beardsley been moving them in there. They cut. You had a bad area over here in North Georgia of automobile theft rings. Some of it runs over into Tennessee, but mostly in South Carolina, Gilbert. And it really was a bastard. And related to it were a lot of murders that were taking place over there. And they got some money, got these undercover guys working, and started to working with the FBI, which the previous GBI department had. And they hell, they really caught them. Convicted them. Same thing in the dope area. Prisons are going back up. It's a different type of prisoner. And a lot is being, I just couldn't enumerate everything that's been done in that area, but mostly what he's accomplished, some of this, these changes.
A different type of criminal, or you mean someone who's more of a professional criminal?
Yeah, well, we got a lot of the prisoners they've had in there are sort of bums. But we're getting two different kind now. One is these mean bastards, and this auto ring related to the sort of the underground around Atlanta. And the other is these young people who they sent into prison for the lack of anything else to do with them. That appear to be, you could recapture them.
You mostly drug offenders?
Drug offenders and misdemeanor. Misdemeanor criminals. And there's some progress has been made, not a hell of a lot, with the judges trying to get them to deal a little differently with these young people. And that's a tough problem. Yeah. It's a right unpopular attitude to take that you ought not send them all to prison. And Jimmy right now is very unpopular with the Superior Court judges for that reason. I think the prison back up now probably got more than we had when Mike did the King. But as I say, they're different. He went over there briefly. I think there was 100 or between 100 and 200 prisoners over there. Some of them were blind, couldn't hardly walk. They really were medical cases. Cleaned all that down. People that ought not to be in prison out. And then there's a lot of the prisoners now are in halfway houses.
Work release programs?
Work release programs. Well, you still got a lot of them, and they still feel they're in areas where they're not as burdensome, and there's some hopes of rehabilitating some of them. But I think to sum up, there's other areas that I could say a lot on, but I think that the unique thing and the most substantive thing that the government has done, other than the reorganization plan itself, is to bring into the top jobs people of excellence, absolutely in every area. He hadn't been a father in that. And it's created all kind of damn political problems. Brought a lot of highly qualified people are not very skillful in the political area. But even in the highway program, this boy that's running for governor now, Bert Lance from over at Calhoun. He's a just absolutely great fellow, isn't he? They had a, really had a, an old farmer, fine old man running the highway department, been running about 30 years. And Jimmy fired him and put Bert Lance in there. Terrible political problem, but it really just revamped the highway department, set it up on long range planning and studies and goals that were based on statistics. And Ellis McDougall got a fine man over in the banking area. And in just every area, somehow or another, he was able to get just top-notch people, and it's amazing to see the difference.
So what do you attribute, Mr. Cooper, what do you attribute to Governor Carter's problems in relationship with Atlanta newspapers?
That personal. I probably know a little too much about that. It's been very unfortunate. Jack Tall and I were classmates. He was playmates. He was raised in Bainbridge at the same place I was. We were the same age.
How old is that, if I might ask?
57. And while we do some work, my firm does some work for Cox Broadcasting and Cox Enterprise. And Jack and I are close friends. Jack's son, fine young lawyer in Carl Sanders' law firm. And Carl was a sort of the pride of the Atlanta establishment, including Jack Tall. So they supported Carl, and Jimmy fought like hell and really tore into him, and it was a damn tough scrap. And, during the campaign, was one of our people over there, but consulting me, or Jimmy and Barry Rover there, asked a letter to Greg Murphy and called him a bastard, kept bastard. And we didn't find out, but two or three weeks after. But they took out after Jimmy. The damn thing just got worse after the campaign. And hell, I got them together and I talked with them, and Jimmy has tried to reconcile the damn thing. But it's not just that letter, it's a lot of little things, but it's all personal. There was a guy over here that wrote some kind of paper for the Southern Education Association or something from Tennessee, from the University of Tennessee, and was making a study of this reorganization and all that. And he came in and said to me, and he said, tell me one thing. He asked me the same question. He said, Carter has accomplished all these programs that the Atlanta newspapers have been supporting for 40 years. And says, why are they crossed up with him? Well, it's a damn complex thing, and it's really a damn sad thing, because it's caused us a lot of damn work and trouble. We nearly lost a reorganization program on account of it. We passed it by one vote.
Am I correct? You sort of just been constant sniping?
Constant. It's the worst kind of damn stuff, too. They have sided with the Vestamatic, who they've been trying to gut for 40 years, 10 years. And it's the most personal kind of damn belittling. Well, just an example of it, just here recently, the Newspaper Editors Association or something met here in Atlanta. And a Georgian, who was in Miami, editor, used to be editor over in Yankee, was chairman of the program committee. And they invited, arranged for Jimmy to have them all out to the mansion. Had him on a panel with Governor Bumper and some of them and all that sort of thing. Cyril Myers, the guy from Miami, resigned as editor shortly before the damn thing, so he went off his program chair. Greg canceled the damn deal out at the mansion. Took Jimmy off of the program. It didn't make a damn deal, just sort of petted him. So it got to be they were here about a week. Started churning in the meetings out there about the damn thing. And so the editors gave him a reception out at one of the places, and practically everybody in the association came. And then at the banquet, the night chain, talked Jimmy into going out and just sitting at the table with some of them. And Dean Rusk, who knew about it, he and Jimmy are good friends. Apparently arranged somebody to ask Jimmy to stand up, and I wasn't out there. They said he gave Jimmy a standing ovation. All sort of little petty crap like that, which is all it can be, is personal. And then justice to them, well, that during the campaign, well, Jimmy tore into them, and they tore into him, and it was a damn continuum. And it really turned out to be helpful to Jimmy, because publicized in Atlanta newspapers are not particularly popular out of the state. But I really think that damn little letter has converted it into a personal thing rather than a political thing. And practically everybody of any substance associated with Jimmy or with a power structure in Atlanta has tried to work the damn thing out. It's just as screwed up as it was.
What happened to the person who wrote the letter?
He's on the Supreme Court.
How much has Maddox hurt, Governor Carter?
Well, that's really what you mean, hurt.
Trying to get the governor's program.
It's been a damn. I'd say it's reduced the efficiency of the administration 25%, because everything we've done over there in the Senate has been just by the nap of the neck. None of the reorganization passed by more than 3 votes. Human resources passed, which was a major, one of the major departments, passed by 1 vote on reconsideration. It failed the first damn time. We screwed around and got up 1 more vote. And
who's the governor's floor leader in the Senate?
Al Holloway.
Where's he from?
Albany.
Did you say Maddox reduced to 25% in terms of what you could have gotten?
But the effect on this, we got most of the legislation. The only thing we tried two things that didn't work out. One was we